This is KTOO Public Media's Juno Afternoon. It's 24 minutes after the hour. Our next guests are here to tell us about a new play by local playwright Frank Koshkatas titled Where the Summit Meets the Stars. Welcome to the studio, everyone. It's nice to have you here.
Ganesh Cheesh.
Frank Koshkatas, playwright, actor, author, director, producer, educator, president of the board of the Juno Douglas Little Theater.
Former president.
Got it. Will you please add to that introduction?
Kosh yuchadduasak tleikakenak Frank Katas yuchadduasak. I mean, a lot of it is I just go by theater artist and educator, I think. I think that covers a lot of what I do.
All right. Ed Littlefield, composer, among other things, and composer for this play, musician. Will you please introduce yourself?
Yeah. Shak hindus tu yuchat duasak. Kagwantane chet lukna chedi edi chetziti. Kukit ay chet shit kakwan dak na chetziti. Gunalchish.
And also in the studio is Joseph Biagini. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
All right. And your producer of this play. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm on staff at Perseverance Theater.
Okay. Thanks for being here. Let's see, the title, Where the Summit Meets the Stars. Frank, where did this come from?
It's a line in the play. So they asked what the title was, and I just picked a page at random. And, no, it is a line in the play, and usually, a lot of times the title is the last thing I come up with. It seems to be more successful than when I pick the title first. I picked a title of a play a while ago. I was like, that's a good play title. And that was 3 years ago. And I've since written three plays. So I think the better luck is to write it and then pick a title from that.
Got it. And where did the inspiration for this play come from?
That's a really great question. I wrote it over 3 days. No, I think it was 6 days total, and five of those was the actual writing of it. And it just sort of like the idea of this play popped into my head, and then I just couldn't get it out. And like I said, I had actually initially went down to write this comedy called Everybody Waves, and I was like, Everybody Waves, what a great title. And then I was like, I got to get this play out, at least like write a scene. And then the next thing you know, I'd written the play. I wrote it while I was down in La Jolla as the playwright in residence at La Jolla Playhouse. And they just sort of gave me some space to work, which was a good distraction. There was no distractions, which was really good for me. And then sort of busted this out.
Was there, you know, sometimes we talk about artists, they had something they needed to approach or something that they needed to explain or explore. Was there something with this one?
It was just sort of like, it wasn't like They Don't Talk Back where it was scene by scene. It was sort of just like this larger concept. And if I can think of this idea, then I'm like, oh, wow, this is a great end result. And then you sort of like deconstruct what I think of the endings, or at least some of the climax towards the endings, or the denouement before, and then sort of deconstruct that and work backwards. And that's sort of what I did with this play. It was like, okay. And actually I went back and forth on what the ending would be, but I knew it was going to be one of those. And then I just worked backwards. And initially I had written it with the character Anthony as the center and the focus. And then I got, I think, maybe like 10 pages into that. And I was like, ooh, I like the character Rose a lot better. So I switched it and made it about her and switched the whole idea of it. And I think it's worked really well.
All right. More questions about that for sure. Ed,
yeah.
How did you get involved?
As per usual, Frank goes, hey, can you do something? And I say, yeah, sure. And then we figure it out later. But it's really cool reading the script. I did the first reading at Native Voices, so in L.A., and worked on it a couple times, came up with some themes and did all, you know, some basic first-time reading work. And then Frank goes, yeah, we need about 50 more of those. I'm like, whoa. Okay. That was that. So this time I'm actually here for the whole 5 days working on this reading, which is amazing, and exploring the use of non-traditional instruments. So instead of a drum, Like, for example, instead of a native drum, I'm actually using a suitcase that's open. And instead of what did we figure out yesterday? We figured out the hummingbird.
Yeah, he took this
cardboard tube
that maybe had fabric on it that he was playing as a didgeridoo at one point.
Yeah, so you do the didgeridoo. That's classic. Yeah. I mean, that's like people do that all the time. What I did is I made a flutter tongue and then hummed and then on the side of my mouth did this like, which goes on for like, I don't know, like it was about a minute or so.
Yeah.
But it's just to give the effect of like the sound is coming from the stage. It's all part of the play in the creation of the world. Frank calls it foliage. I mean, foley. I just used that word foliage. But it's similar to foley where you're making the sounds on the spot for a specific reason. And so I find that really cool because, you know, a lot of the times I'm just playing a drum, like a native drum, or I've got a pre-recorded track, and it's like that's what it is. This time, if you go see the reading tomorrow, and then we did another reading on Saturday, it might be different. That's the cool part. It's like a little bit improvised as the as we work on it.
And part of the structure was taking the because Ed told me Ed and I met during Battles of Fire and Water by Dave Hunsicker 10 years ago, and Ed told me, I'm not really an actor. I'm more of a percussionist. And I didn't really know what that meant until I saw him drumming. So we've had, I've watched him work. And then he told me, oh, I'm probably not going to get on stage anymore. And I go, oh, really? And so I took sort of the idea of like when you're watching, a dance group at Celebration, you see, the song leader is often on stage, sort of like directing where the song is, what song is coming next, what's happening in the dance. And so I go, well, let's take some of that idea of the performing arts and just sort of put it through the cultural lens. What would that look like in a Western style theater format? So we took Ed and I put him on stage. And so he's the character of – right now it's called the musician.
Did you say I'm temporary?
Yeah,
temporary.
Temporary name.
Temporary.
The musician. He's temporary. Well, I might cut him right now.
What I like with Joseph and Frank and I did a first – like a tentative read through on Monday, right? So Monday, and we were all talking about this, about three different elements that it works through. And I think of the musician, now that you are talking about it more, as the glue that holds both worlds together. So there's three worlds, and you've got a musician that kind of like is there for both of them. And then the sound effects are showcased in different things for those two different worlds, but they're always there. So you got this one person that's kind of the glue together. I just thought of that. So,
Joseph, what does your role as producer look like?
That's a great question. A couple years ago, I think Frank showed me this script for the very first time. It was in some early stages before it was even fully written. And then it ended up being part of the commission for the Perseverance Theater's Playwrights Circle. This season, I'm lucky to be in residence at Perseverance as the National New Play Network producer in residence. And so as the producer, I described it in a lot of different ways depending on who I'm talking to. Right now, mm-hmm. I will say it's just supporting the work of the artists who are creating the piece as best as possible. Mm-hmm. So arranging space, rooting around in the prop room to find all these found instruments.
Oh, Joseph is a genius. He found like 100 instruments. It was great for me to play with.
Finding actors and directors and making sure all the business side of the theater is connected up to the rehearsal room.
I want to talk a lot more about this play, but first, there's going to be a reading or two. Is that right? And how can our listeners be part of this?
Yeah, there's going to be a reading tomorrow afternoon, Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. at Perseverance Theater. We're a little tight on space, so we're asking people to write if they'd like to attend. And you can email me at joseph@ptalaska.org. That's Joseph at ptalaska.org if you'd like to attend.
Okay. Frank,
yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about this play's plot?
Ooh, I think you have the piece of paper with it. No, I'm just kidding.
When a near-death experience exactly. derails her flight through Southeast Alaska, is this?
Yeah, go for it. When a flight in Southeast Alaska. No, so it's there's actually sort of two stories happening at the same time. Hmm. I've really kind of struggled on how to explain this story, I'll just say one of my mom read it. She goes, "Wow, that's far out." And I go, what does that mean? She goes, I don't know. It's just far out. So I go, I think that's good. But there's certainly, like, when you see this production, you'll see some – a lot of similarities and a lot of differences, so they don't talk back. You know, structurally and tone, I think it's pretty similar. But there's so many things that are vastly different. But basically there's it centers around the young lady named Rose, and one of the storylines follows her and her budding relationship with Anthony and where that takes you. So it's the very first time they meet that they remember, and then all the way through their whole relationship. So that's one of the storylines that's happening. And like Ed said, there's multiple worlds within this. And so another storyline that's happening is Rose, same character, wakes up and she's on this boat. And she's on a tugboat, and there's a tugboat captain. And she can't really remember. She thinks she's concussed because she's having sort of a foggy memory of all of this. And as far as what she knows is that he's taking her home. So taking her back and she, you know, it's trying to keep her safe. That's what she thinks and knows at that point. And then at some point, these two stories cross over. One of the things that it has helped to describe it, which I never even thought of until the very first post-reading discussion down in Los Angeles, was they go, oh, this is a mystery. And I go, I never really thought of it as a mystery. But now – and it's so interesting. So many people are, oh, it's a mystery. And you're like, oh, okay, great. I guess I just don't know what a mystery is. But it feels like it has some sort of mystery elements. And same thing. People are, oh, Ed's in this. Is this a musical? I go, I think it has musical elements. You know, Ed's helping create this sound and soundscape. And we had to distinguish what a song was, what a theme was, and a whole bunch of different – you know, elements of sound within this production. So it's a lot of different things. It has a whole lot of different influences from, you know, Eastern Asian theater to the Pacific, or theater of the Pacific. So it's sort of a lot. It's a lot of different things. And like my mom said, it's pretty far out.
Ed, when you first saw the script, what impressed you or surprised you about it?
Well, there's I don't know how much I should say, but there's a traditional world and a contemporary world that it and I use the traditional world loosely because once you hear it, you'll figure that out. But traditional, and so how do you combine, like, how do you make those what Frank was talking about, themes and musical elements and instruments, how do you combine those without them totally being separate entities? So that was kind of cool. And, you know, after the first read, I mean, honestly, I was like, whoa, that was weird or just strange. I didn't really get the message. But after like three or four times reading, you're like, whoa, that is a really heavy story. Like, it's a really powerful story that can probably relate to a lot of people. and so I think the first time I read it, I didn't know what to think. After the second or third time, Frank actually gave me some really good advice. He goes, hey, I want a drum kit. You know, I want to just sound effects. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So that freed me up to not only just sing a song, right, and like drum, but I was like, all right, and this is what we're doing. I'm like playing the rhythmic melody on a set of paint cans, you know, and like that, just the sound. So you're hearing this da 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 da, that melody, right, all throughout the play, but in different iterations to help show which world we're in. So.
And speaking of drums, you have one with
you
today.
Yeah, I do. Well, I just sang half of it. I'll sing it again. This is the theme. So everybody, we had a great conversation last night. I was like sharing that about folk music. What I say is like everybody's like, oh, man, this melody stuck in my head. I was like, well, thank you. That means it's music of the people. It's folk music, because if that song is stuck in your head, that means people sing it. So and then I talked about some other jazz music that I love to listen to. I say, if you can't sing the melody, you know, think about that. I don't know.
But Ed Talk.
Ed Talk.
Ed Talk,
yeah, there we
2019.
Go. 2019. That's an Ed Talk of tomorrow at 3 p.m. and the Phoenix at Perseverance Theater. Here we go. Here's the main melody. Hey-ya, 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 na, hey-ya, hey-ya, na, hey-ya, hey-ya, na, hey-ya, hey-ya, na, something like that. That's you hear that a lot going through, but then yeah, there's a beatbox part that I kind of made some.
We have a whistle fight
between between the two, the musician and John, the other character, and it's just really fun to experiment, take that main theme and put it into everything. There's a lot of water involved, and so I've got a bucket of water that Joseph filled up for me, gave me some cool things to play with. I'm looking at the table that I have set up.
Yeah, it plays a bugle to make it sound like an airplane.
Yep.
He takes that same bugle and fills it with water to make the sound of a whale.
That's pretty cool. That's probably my favorite one so far. The night is young, though. We still got one more rehearsal tonight. And then also to get that more contemporary thing, I have some pre-recorded tracks, too, that go that go along with it. So you got like a drum set and a bass playing and
yeah, it was like when we were down in California, Ed came, he goes, I have the song that I wrote. And I go, oh, and he played it, and it is a good song, and it was this song, right?
It's gold, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
and
gold.
We're like, oh, great. And I go, well, in my head, you're not stopping. And he was like, what's that? I go, we need 50 more of these.
Yes,
I need you to play the whole time. And he's like, oh. And I go, it's like those Japanese buoys that wash up on shore. You like find a couple of those and play those, and some bottles, and like plastic buoys. And he was going, okay.
And then I thought, do you know that we're in LA right now, right? So,
Frank, I've heard you say several times to Ed, like, Ed, just write it. Ed, do you know what to do? Ed, are you ever going to say to Frank, like, all right, Frank, write it.
Write me a play. Right now.
I think he did.
It's really cool because, there are playwrights out there that say, I want this. I want this sound. I want this sound. This melody, it needs to sound like this. It needs to feel like this. In the true sense of community and what Joseph is producing at Perseverance, it's like the creative team is all working together. So, granted, we don't have a light designer right now or like a scene designer, set designer, but we've got the sound and we've got the actors all in and the playwright and the producer all in one room saying, oh, wow, I did a couple sounds and everybody just looked up at me and they were like kind of quizzical. And I was like, let me try something else. And I did something else. And then it's just so funny. You guys can't tell, but when you all look back at me, everybody just their eyebrows go, and I go, that one's it. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm getting that automatic feedback about, you try it four or five different ways, and I say, all right, so we whittle down to two, and like A or B. Do A again? A. Do B again. Great. Okay, pick that one. And I'm like, cool.
It's like the eye test.
Yeah. Left eye, right eye. So better, worse. So it's very liberating, but also challenging because you don't have any frame of reference. So like Devilfish, I came up with a Devilfish sound and, we kind of worked with that. And that was our main thing for the Devilfish. But this one is free form. It's for liberating in musical creation.
I said jazz, which wasn't the appropriate, and then you corrected me with the right.
Well, jazz is a rhythm section, that's the instrument, but like it's more improvisatory,
that's right.
Improvisation in that result. So you can say there's a little more give and take between the musician and other actors.
And we actually have one of the characters that are written into the script isn't actually here because this character doesn't say anything. It's based off like Japanese koken that are, they're dressed all in black and they go and set up the scenes. But the idea behind this particular character was that they're part of the musician. And throughout the process of this play, in my head, I go, how can we build some of, the things, our values within, especially within people from Southeast Alaska, like, let's have this person be sort of an apprentice to the musician. So the idea would be if this play ever gets produced again, that particular character will then play the musician part because they've been studying under Ed right now, where they're learning some of the intricate – how do you play this tea kettle? You know, like right. some of the things that might not be so intuitive. Or like some of these I'm like, Ed, how do you write this on a musical chart? And he's going, I don't know. What is this thing? And we're like, it kind of looks like a caterpillar. So you're like – so that's funny. Some of the ideas. There's a character in there, but it's, you know, taking some of these cultural ideas and trying to inject them into the Western style of theater.
Well, I can't wait to see it. Joseph, will you outline again how we can see this weekend, please?
Yeah, the reading presentation performance is going to be at Perseverance Theater tomorrow afternoon, Friday at 3 p.m. If you'd like to attend, you can email me at Joseph, J-O-S-E-P-H, at ptalaska.org. And I'd also love to give a quick shout out to Silent Sky, which is coming up in January at Perseverance Theater, and you can find out more about that on our website, ptalaska.org.
All right. We've been talking about Where the Summit Meets the Stars tomorrow at 3.
Rio Alberto, Aaron Tripp, and Stephen Blanchett are the readers.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Shout out to them.
Shout out to them.
And when can we expect this in full production? What are we thinking?
Someday.
Someday soon. So yeah. Probably don't have to wait too long.
Yeah.
You guys, thank you so much for coming by today. It's 3 o'clock tomorrow at Perseverance Theater. Gunnar Chish.
Thank you.